If you seriously need to save on groceries, and more for less is what you crave, Food City understands the struggle is real. That's why their high-quality store brands are such a great deal. Nobody does quality and savings like Food City.
Okay.
There's just still a lot we don't know.
There is a lot. There's a lot. It was a struggle early on in the game. Tennessee ends up winning by a fairly comfortable margin. And
covered the big spread.
They did, ultimately. So we'll talk about that and more as we take a look now at the game plan. So Vols did defeat the Gamecocks last night. Frank Martin with an impassioned defense of Rick Barnes afterwards. Did you hear that?
I did.
Yeah, so he's ready. Tennessee now heads to Kentucky on Saturday. That will be a different challenge than South Carolina.
Kentucky, LSU and Auburn are really good.
Kentucky last night, though, defeated Vanderbilt on the road. I don't want to take anything away from an SEC road win. They were ho-humming their way through it.
For sure. Like, they have those good teams in basketball. It's impossible to get them. It's the same with softball or baseball. When you play that often, it's impossible to make Kentucky approach the Vandy game like if they were playing LSU
sure.
or Auburn. So sure. You get that the run, you know, a little let down or whatever. But as long as you win your letdown games like that and then you're up for the good games, I mean, they're gonna be good.
When we roll around to the 10 o'clock hour, I saw an article yesterday in The Athletic, breakdown of the postseason AP poll versus the preseason.
Oh, gosh.
It was the opinion of this writer that the preseason AP poll may have been the most inaccurate ever. But also, realistically, who could have predicted X, Y, and Z? So it's not a failure of the people who voted in the preseason poll as much as it is a commentary on just how crazy this college football season is.
Yeah, and I mean, every year, too, you know, like if you're a voter and your job is to know as much as you can about everybody. That's mm-hmm. a hard job. And if there was a formula that every year you just did number of returning starters, number of returning all-conference players, do you return a quarterback? Like that's what they do to determine it. You know, that's like the Steels, almost called it Kevin Steele's book, the Steel.
Phil
Steele, there yeah. you go. Yep. He didn't make $900,000 to do nothing. But
yeah.
Those books, it's all based on that kind of stuff, but that alone is not the formula. Like, there's so many other things involved that you can't quantify, and you don't know. You're just grasping at straws, honestly.
So we'll take a look at the list of the crazy things that happened this year that led the AP poll from start to finish. Take a look at some of the teams who were consistent. Our stat on there's always a team in the top 10 that isn't there at the end of the year.
Ooh.
Times 3 this year.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah. And an interesting note on a top 10 matchup from the first half of the season as well. We'll talk about all that coming up in Big Topic Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour, reviewing the college football season as a whole. We'll have our VFL and the NFL update, thanks to Blue Water, coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. NFL coaching firings, well, they added another one yesterday after it seemed like Joe Judge was going to be fine. Joe Judge, not fine. Reportedly, he said he wanted to be consulted on who the new general manager was, and they said, you know what?
Like, how do you do that? Is he trying to get fired?
No,
did
he get the Super Bowl trophies and drag it from the back of his car?
I mean, dude, like, either he has zero awareness of his, like, the situation, which I have a hard time believing that's the case. If you can get hired to be a head coach, you have to be competent, like, at least a little bit. Can we all just stop hiring all of the people who coach under the best coaches?
Yeah.
Anybody can be a linebacker's coach for Bill Belichick. Literally anybody. If you can teach the scheme, you don't have to hardly teach fundamentals in the NFL. They're already good.
You know what the best part about Joe Judge getting fired is?
What?
Derek Dooley and Jeremy Pruitt are unemployed.
Yeah, they're going to hit that job market.
Now, I can't laugh too much at Jeremy Pruitt because we're still paying his dumb. Well, we're still going to have to pay his.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't know if our boy Robert Ayers is still coaching the defense at Catholic, then I would. I didn't think so, right? Yeah. Well, you know, maybe they can hire Pruitt as an advisor.
pass. Hard pass.
At the Butch Jones Field?
Coach Mobs. I'm just
throwing it out there, Mobs.
Alum, supporter,
just
all of that. Do not let Jeremy. I appreciate that the Jones family gave money for the video board. I can get over that. Don't hire Jeremy Pruitt. No. Not that he would ever want to live in Knoxville for one second.
There
is, unless in the extremely unlikely event he's ever hired by a college program again. Other than that, he will never set foot in this city again.
Agreed.
I can almost guarantee.
Agreed. I agree.
Hates it.
Neither would Butch, though. Not anymore.
Eh.
Unless he's coming to recruit a player to Arkansas State to go 2-10. I mean, if that's what if people are looking for that, that's always there too. I have been salty all week. This is
nothing wrong with it. I haven't been pretty salty too. More on that. We'll talk some of the postgame quotes from UT Carolina. All that and more today on the Eric Haynes Show. And that's the game plan. It's laid out for you every day by our friends at 42nd Street.
42st.com. If you're looking for help for your company to take that next step, all you got to do is go check out 42nd Street Design. Mike Carlton, they help you with your website. They build it the right way. So you pop up on search. If you're a fence company and you say, hey, I need a fence near me. There's like all the different algorithms and ways things need to be done. I'm not even close to smart enough to know them, but I know Mike does, and I know that his clients benefit from that and all the stuff they do. 42st.com.
The Eric Haynes Show rolls on next. We talk Tennessee hoops, a full breakdown of Tennessee and South Carolina coming up next on the Eric Haynes Show on the Sports Animal.
All right, we're back. You're listening to the Eric Haynes Show. Appreciate you doing that. Logan, Brian, and myself. A lot of fun sports going on yesterday. Shout out to Mickey Deerstone. Saw him over at Long's Drugstore this morning. Giving Ruthie a big old fat hug and telling her we all love her from over here.
Voice of Lady Vols.
Yeah.
Lady Vols back in action on Thursday.
I said, this team looks pretty good. Do they have it? And he said, well, they haven't shown that they don't have it. It's a very Mickey comment. Of it's too early to see.
And then Saturday.
That's true. I mean, it's straight. That's true.
Sunday, not Saturday. Sunday, Thomas Bowling Arena is the We Back Pat game.
Oh, nice.
So,
gonna be exciting. That's always fun.
All right. Tennessee against South Carolina last night. Looked pretty good at times, but it's still not where you want it to be. How do you, as a fan, evaluate last night's game as a win? Don't want to apologize for a win. 20-point win, ultimately.
Yeah, exactly.
But early on, it was a struggle, and it felt like, and Tom Hart and Dane Bradshaw said this on the broadcast, if you're looking for evidence, that Tennessee's fixed, the first half was not it.
Mm-mm. I think you start with what you just said in a different way. It's sometimes we as fans and media, and it's easy for me to regain perspective quickly, having played a lot of different sports at a high level, but like it is a 40-minute game. It's not a 30-minute football game. It's not a 25-minute basketball game. It is a 40-minute game, and you need to reserve judgment until the full 40 minutes is up, and then you analyze everything. Because if you do that, you're overanalyzing the first half and you're exhausted. It wasn't good.
Well, and you only led at the half 27-24 until Josiah Jordan James hits a three-pointer at the buzzer to make it 30-24. A six-point lead does feel better going to the halftime break than a three-point lead, but I think it also hitting that shot the way he did seemed to give them some extra confidence as they came out of the second half.
Yeah, and I feel like they all did. Like here in the first half, one thing they did do well is they were attacking the basket. They were getting there. They were penetrating dish. Not a lot of hesitating on the shots. Missed them all. I loved it. So Rick Barnes spends half his press conference talking about his 5-star, 6-foot-6-inch perimeter player who's not playing good.
Yeah,
and it's mainly his 3-point attempts. And then in the first minute of the game. He jacks up 2 threes in like back-to-back possessions and just full straight-on bricks, both of them. And I'm sitting here, I'm sure every Tennessee fan watching that was like, oh, really? really? That's the guy that's chucking up the first two in the first half? When the whole conversation on every talk show in town is, how does this kid not ever make shots? But he at least he keeps shooting. I don't know. Like, part of me is glad he's doing it, because the only way to get out of that is to shoot yourself out of it. It's like a baseball player in a slump. If someone's in a slump and you just go sit them on the bench for 2 months, they come back to the plate, they're still in a slump. It sucks, but you got to let them play through it. If there's someone you need in the lineup, then you got to try to figure it out. And is it fool's gold a little bit yesterday? Because South Carolina, dude, is terrible.
They're not good.
They're terrible. And they were disinterested. Like, they already look. Because, listen, Frank Martin is hardcore. Like, he always has been. He is the screamer, the yeller. I mean, there was one TV, like, quick before they go to break, camera on him. And I think he dropped 7 or 8 F-bombs in, like, 9 seconds. I didn't even know how you could do that. He didn't say enough words for the amount of F-bombs that were in there. Like,
he
it didn't make sense.
He paints in profanities like some men paint in
like, there's no
oils.
Way it made sense. Are you blank? Kid blank? Me blank? I mean, it was like, I don't even know how he did it, but he's so intense. So when you're like that, when you coach like that, Butch Jones, right, Frank Martin, when that's what you do and your team's not good and they know they're not good and the game starts to get away from them, that doesn't work. It doesn't. I mean, it's just, I don't think he's going to be the coach there after this year. They're really bad. I don't see how they turn it around.
He may not. It's the second half ended up being just a runaway for Tennessee. Outscored the Gamecocks 36-22 down the stretch. Fulgerson with 10 points, Vescovy 14, James 11, Ziegler 11. Ziegler continues to improve. I like that.
Yeah, this, I like it. I like his game. When he's on the court, you know, this is how you do it. When you see a player check in or, you know, starting or whatever, and you feel good about it, then that's all you need to know. You know, like, you see Ziegler, whenever I see him check in, I'm like, all right, good. Here we go.
I think most importantly, Tennessee limited themselves to 15 turnovers last night. You didn't give
South
Carolina.
Do you have the stats pulled up?
Yeah.
How many three-point attempts did we have?
Tennessee attempted 21 three-pointers.
Okay, listen, I'm telling you, the number is 25. The number's 25. And I don't know, how many did we make out of 21?
7.
Yeah. That's fine. What, 33%, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not great, right? If you shoot 9 more of them and you only make 33%, you shoot your way out of a chance to win. Those few possessions where we attack the basket instead, you know, even though we don't have a lot, like, Kumwa's not a great scorer, Euros is not. Fulkerson has spurts, right? But it's not, he's not like an every possession, if you get him the ball, he can put it in guy. But they still looked like there was an attempt to do that. And South Carolina, I'll give them credit, and our guys credit for this. They started off, they played a lot of man-to-man in the first half.
To your point, that is 38% of Tennessee shot attempts were from 3.
Under 40.
Under 40.
If they're under 40, yeah, because we've been saying that all year.
44% of their, coming into the game, 44% of their shot attempts on the season were from 3-point range. And that can't happen, especially when you're not hitting.
Yeah, and we kept using the reference, like, the Golden State Warriors shoot 46, but they have the best 3-point shooters in the entire world.
Yeah.
We have some good college players, like, call it what it is, right? And there's some pretty good college players. You can't be shooting as many threes as the freaking Golden State Warriors, but they didn't. So if the threes are under 40 and the 3-point percentage, if the 3-point attempts, I'm going to say, are less than 25 and it is less than 40% of your overall field goal attempts, we just need to track that throughout the year, because I feel like that's pretty, at this point in time, that holds true with most games. But they had a plan for it. They did well against the zone and they tried to do it. Frank Martin went back and forth between man and zone, two different zones and man to man. And he would do that. And that's, you know, you got to try to throw them off a little bit. You can't just play the same thing. But because we weren't shooting a ton of threes and because we were making some of them, it makes it a little harder to just squat down there and let us just have easy looks. Now, listen, it's South Carolina. So I'm not trying to be like, oh, because I've been very critical and of the team so far, just for reasons I think everybody is. But I do believe that them playing well, especially to end the game, they have a good chance to go to practice today with, like, smiles on their face. it gets hard, man. Like, you know how it is. Like, in softball, it's no different. Baseball, it's like you lose a series and it's not the end of the world. You know, you lose one series to a good team, and then you lose a second one. You know, you win the first game on Friday, and then you're coming home on Sunday and you lost a series. Like, there needs to be like a giant, like, explosion or something that wakes everybody up. And you're like, okay, if it turns to three, then we're going to make it really hard for ourselves to pull ourselves out of it. It's a really fine line, and it's okay to lose, but, you know, like, we needed to win that game and play well, especially in the second half. They did it.
And you had to get right because you have Kentucky on Saturday.
And in a weird way, I feel okay about it. Listen, I do not think we're going to beat them. I do not think we're going to beat them. I just watch our team play, and even when we have success and make shots and stuff, we don't have explosive players. We just don't. And it is what it is. And you watch some of these other teams play, you know, in transition, and they got guys flying all over the place, dunking the ball everywhere. We're not very long. We're kind of quick. We have a couple quick guys. We do play good defense, but I think that was my thing. Like, I was watching the game in the first half yesterday, and I was like, you know what? I don't know that they need to be doing anything any different. Like, I'm watching them play, and this sucks, but, like, I was like, they're just not that good. Like, and I don't like that. I'm telling you how I felt watching them. Watching them play, especially in the first half, I was like, man, I mean, is this, this might just be kind of what they are.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, that's easy for me. I just take the word Elite Eight and Sweet 16 out of my mind, and then I just watch it and I enjoy it. But there's so much hype. You know, you talk about preseason polls. When you bring in a five-star and another five-star after your two five-stars the year before went pro in the first round, how could you not think you were going to be great? And that's all of us just kind of assumed that. And maybe they can be at the end, but they're not right now.
Yeah.
They need to find a way to win enough games to get themselves playing into the tournament and stuff like that. That needs to be what they do. They need to make the tournament, and they need to be playing well when they go.
Josiah Jordan James also had 12 rebounds to go with his 11 points. Second career double-double, his first this year. I thought he rebounded with a complete game.
Yeah,
he played good. More importantly than just shooting better.
He played good. He played very well.
And his numbers ended up being 3-6 from the field, 2-4 from three, 3-4 from the free throw line. Yeah.
Perfect. Hey, dude, if you can get us in and around 10 boards and in and around 10 points, and let's even throw two or three assists and maybe a block or a steal, something like that. If you can be that guy, then he has tremendous value
the team. I think the most important thing Tennessee did last night, because we talked yesterday about how good of an offensive rebounding team South Carolina is, limited the Gamecocks to 10 offensive rebounds.
Yeah, that's good. They normally get more than that.
Yeah. And no player on their roster had more than two. Meanwhile, Tennessee, 28 defensive rebounds, ending possessions.
Yeah.
Didn't give South Carolina any second chances, particularly in the second half. And that makes a huge difference, because South Carolina makes their money, second chance points, all that. 6 second chance points last night for the game.
Yeah, that's really good. If the guys play like that, then they will be able to compete with anybody. I wouldn't pick them to beat Auburn. What's that kid, the point guard's name?
I'm not going to pick anybody to beat Auburn.
I haven't
watched a lot of them, but I've seen all the...
Logan, do you know what I'm talking about? He's the little point guard, and he's... when I say little, I mean he's tiny. He's got a sweet little fro. He looks like he's out there in 1975, and he just breaks dudes off, gets to the basket, shoots fadeaway threes from 8 feet behind the three-point line. I think he was like he transferred there. I think last year might have been his first year there. I can't remember exactly, but he is ridiculous.
And Auburn ran over Alabama on the road last night.
It was bad. I watched it. Alabama's good. They're like us. Like, Alabama can compete with anybody. They're going to lose games that they shouldn't lose. But that was not a game that they shouldn't lose. Auburn was way better than they were.
They
straight up.
What I saw last night were a bunch of Alabama fans that were angry at how many Auburn fans got into Coleman Coliseum last night.
Oh.
Apparently, they have a old school donation program where if you donate money to get basketball tickets, it raises your football priority. So they have a lot of, from what I read, from talking to one of my Alabama acquaintances. They have a lot of people who buy basketball tickets and never use them and only sell them to opposing fans. And so so Auburn fans filled the place last night.
Good for them.
Yeah. I'm just glad that now Alabama fans have come up with things to be mad about.
Yeah. Listen.
They're having a bad week.
No. They're having a bad week, but I'm telling you, this makes it worse to me. I see so much happiness from Alabama fans towards Georgia in a like, hey, you know what? Like, we don't need to get it every year. You know, like, look how many we're winning. It's okay to not win one. And like, Georgia fans are like barking and ready for the fight. And Alabama's like, hey, great job, guys. Really? No, seriously. Really well done. Proud of you. It's not quite a bless your heart, but it's like a such a passive aggressive, you know, like, hey, we're still so much better than you. It's okay. You can have one. That's probably how I would play it too, honestly. You can't win the fight for this year, right? I mean, like, if you say, well, you're going to lose that. So it's just like, hey, man, good job. Good job.
When we get back, more on Tennessee Hoops, 656-9900, 866-656-9900, if you want to join us. Also, something very important happened 23 years ago today.
Uh-oh.
I'll tell you what that is next on the Eric Haines Show.
MJ.
Last night, 22nd-ranked Tennessee took down South Carolina 66-46. Santiago Vescovi led the Vols with 14 points. Josiah Jordan James and Zakai Ziegler each added 11. Elsewhere in college basketball, 18th-ranked Kentucky took down Vanderbilt 78-66. Number 4 Auburn held on late to take down number 24 Alabama 81-77. Texas A&M beat Ole Miss 67-51. Number 19 Texas Tech upset top-ranked Baylor 65-62. Number 9 Kansas held on against number 15 Iowa State 62-61, and Stanford upset number 5 USC 75-69. In the NFL, the Giants have fired head coach Joe Judge after two seasons, and general manager Dave Gettleman has retired. In the NBA, the Grizzlies got a win over the Golden State Warriors 116-108. That's the 10th straight victory for the Grizzlies, and the Suns took down the Raptors 99-95. Have a good morning. I'm Logan Ward.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's me, Eric Ainge, of the Eric Ainge Show. Trying to be Mr. Rogers. It didn't happen for me. Have you ever met a less Mr. Rogers person than,
me? I have met a less Mr. Rogers person than you, but it's I see where you're going with it.
I could rock the sweater vest like a champ, though.
You probably could. 656-9900, 866-656-9900, more on Tennessee Hoops in a minute. Do you know what happened 23 years ago today, Eric Ainge?
No, and I spent the whole break trying to think about it, and it's just a waste of my little mental energy that I have.
This indirectly impacted your life.
Oh, no.
The Sopranos premiered 23 years ago today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
You're welcome.
One day when it's more appropriate for me to, I'm just going to tell the dang story on the radio so everyone can stop being like, what is this Sopranos thing?
Maybe our last day.
I got a second Sopranos story I don't think I've ever told you.
I can't wait. Do you know how HBO promoted the show in New York City?
No.
They bought ads on thousands of taxi cabs that was just a bumper sticker next to a fake arm being extended out the trunk of the cab.
Oh, that's genius.
It is. So 23 years ago today, in my opinion, top three greatest shows of all time.
I would agree with that.
656-9900. Do we talk Tennessee Hoops with you? Steve is up first. Steve, welcome in. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I've listened to the talk with you guys, with Josiah this week, and I agree with you on a whole lot of fronts. The one thing that just absolutely shocks me is how they're using him. I think we would all agree that he's arguably the best rebounder on the team, or certainly one of the best. And the way Tennessee runs their offense with him, always on the perimeter, it's like our best rebounder on the offensive end is never anywhere remotely close to the glass. And I'm just kind of shocked at how they're using him. I know he's not 6'10", I even Dame Bradshaw, and they were saying it last night, penetrate to the elbow and shoot a 15-foot jumper or something. But that leads me to my second thought. With some of the, it seemed like they backed off of it last night, but I wonder if, I don't know if they would ever admit it, but I wonder how much analytics is playing into these games where we go 6 out of 32 from three-point. Would they rather go 6 out of 32 from three-point than shoot 10 out of 24 from two-point? I don't know. I'd love to find that out. But anyway, this is my take. I'm just stunned at how they're using Josiah. It just doesn't make sense to me.
And I think he's playing the three spot, so playing the position that he plays, that's where it starts and that's where it is. I don't disagree though with that guy crashing the glass. So you said he's not 6'10". Well, he actually is. He's 6'6" with a 6'10" wingspan. So he actually is that tall. You know what I mean? So like, no, and I wasn't being a jerk. I was just saying, like, how is he not hitting the boards? Like, and you can do that with like Ziegler. Ziegler's never going to get a rebound. Like, let's just accept it.
If it bounces out, he'll get one.
If someone bricks it bad enough to bounce all the way back to the 3-point line, yes, he may get a rebound or one in the corner that he just runs and gets before the other big guys get to it. But just that's your check back guy. You know, Vescovy, that's your check back guy. You're small, even Chandler to an extent. There's all those other players on the shot. They can be backpedaling, going back to get, for transition defense. I would be sending James to the glass as much as possible. Assuming he can do it without fouling and stuff. Yeah, no, I agree with you, Steve. I mean, that's a guy I never even thought of that, but that is a really good point. I mean, you're talking about, we're sitting here talking about the difference in only shooting 21 threes instead of 26 threes. And well, that's five possessions. But if you shoot them, at 33% and you shoot five less, if you score a two on half of all of those possessions, then right, you're winning most of the games you play. Like the margin of error here is very slim. I think the numbers for all of us, Steve, and Brian and I kind of just pieced it together this week, but it's like we just need to remember under 25 and under 40. If we can shoot under 25 threes and we can shoot our three-point percentage of all our attempts is under 40%, then I think we're going to have a good chance to win. And we don't subscribe to the threes or layups, threes or dunks, Alabama does that a little bit. There's a lot of teams in that the analytics that Steve's talking about, we'll just attack the basket or just, shoot a three. But if you're not making your threes and it's the SEC and the guys are big down there, if you're not getting all the way to the rim, there's only one other option. And that's an in-between. That's a little jump shot, a little floater. If you're Chandler beating your guy off. I mean, that's gotta be something that you can do and a basket that you can score.
Well, thanks for taking my call, guys. You guys have a great day.
Steve, appreciate it. Good stuff. I also,
we don't beat people off the dribble enough.
No. But if you did focus on that, and to his point about the analytics, I think they are heavily invested in them, but I don't think Rick Barnes allows them to be handcuffed by them. They're not prisoner to them.
No, and I do think that if they play with that amount of energy,
yeah,
on both ends, yeah, then they're going to have a chance to win every game they play. And again, we still shot 21 threes. Okay, that if you compare it to every other team in college hoops that played last night, that's probably on the low end.
But there are a lot of teams that are in love with the three ball.
Yes, and like the thing is, like for some of them, I don't blame them. I don't blame Auburn for shooting a lot of threes. And they got guys that clean up the glass. I mean, it's like if you have guys that can get a good look whenever they want to get a good look, yeah, then for sure do it. But like, if a lot of teams you're playing are going to do that on a night, if you play LSU and they're shooting a lot of threes and missing them, guess what? You can beat them, but not if you're shooting them all right back and bricking them all right back. You got to take advantage of those misses.
I think, yeah, if Tennessee was getting more rebounds off of the three-pointers, and it's a lot harder to rebound a three than it is any other type of shot. The ball bounces farther, it just is. But if Tennessee is getting more of those rebounds, we're not having this conversation, because put it right back up and the missed three does become a made two and it's not a big deal.
Yeah, we'd be pulling that stat going, well, we shoot way too many threes and we don't make enough of them, but on 17% of them we get the offensive rebound or something like that. Yeah, you regain possession. That's what it's all about.
The fact that so many of those missed threes have been possession enders, I think, is the problem more than attempting them or missing them or any of that. That's kind of where it is for me.
Yeah. I think we're kind of all on the same page with that. Yeah. You don't take a ton from it, but it's enough to It's enough to go. They're not left for dead, right? I mean, like this is the thing.
No.
Like the Tennessee basketball
team
is
in
fine.
The top
they're
25.
Fine.
They're 11-4. They're 2-2.
They're
in conference.
Fine. They're fine. I just think that when you watch it, it's you know what this team is right now?
What's that?
This team is 20. Was it 16 or 15? When we had all the leads on everybody.
Yeah, and couldn't finish.
And then lost. You know, like it's kind of like you're watching it or in 2016, another one. Here you go. We fumbled the ball in the first four games like 40 times and got 39 of them.
Yeah.
And we're all sitting there watching and going, okay, that's good. We keep getting them back. And then you go to Texas A&M and you have 7 turnovers and you lose to a team that we had no business losing to.
Yep.
That's kind of the thing. You're watching it and you're going, okay, yeah, they're winning. They're 11-4. It's fine. Like no one's freaking out. No one should freak out. But when you watch the games happen, you can't help but watch it and like, each person has a few different things they pull out of it where you're going, I don't know, man. I mean, that if they do that, they're not going to beat the good teams. If they do that, they're not going to beat the good teams. And that, here's the thing. They get to play all those games. They very well might not do that. You know?
We'll find out on Saturday up in Lexington because that is
be a huge test.
I think it's the first real test of, is Tennessee's performance to this point in the year a problem or is it just how they've played against some of these teams? It's an interesting question. It's something that they're going to have to sort out starting on Saturday. We'll come back 656-9900, 866-656-9900 if you want to join us on the Eric Ains Show on the Sports Animal.
If you want to join us here on the EA Show.
Let's go to the phones to talk to Randall. Randall, you're on the Eric Ains Show. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hope everything's going good.
Except for having to live in a world where Georgia's a national champion, yes.
Okay, that's exactly my topic, okay? I'm not going to mention any names, but there's a individual on WNML that said, okay, Georgia winning the national championship does not affect Tennessee.
I would vehemently disagree with that.
I totally disagree.
Yeah.
I totally disagree because, one, okay, look at how many people we signed in the state of Georgia this year. Okay, that's just like Alabama winning the national championship. How does it affect the recruiting in Alabama? You know, kids would rather go to Alabama than go to Auburn or Detroit. And I just think that he's wrong to say that it doesn't affect Tennessee when it absolutely does.
Yeah, I don't know who said it, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. I disagree with that. I think, particularly as you mentioned, with as important as recruiting the state of Georgia is for Tennessee, Georgia was obviously rolling before winning last night. But I think what winning a championship does is it takes it from a place where you are likely to have a chance to win a championship to being a place where you can now sell that you do win championships. And I just, that does not benefit
Tennessee.
You can go to
Georgia and get a ring.
Yeah.
You can go to Georgia and get a ring. You can go to Alabama and get a ring.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that he was, I think he put the cart in front of the horse when he made that comment.
Well, I feel like, I agree with both you guys. I do think it affects Tennessee more. I also feel like we are on the first floor of a 20-floor hotel, and we want to get to the 20th floor. So does them being even better on the 20th floor hurt us getting there? Yes, of course it does. But I don't think until we are competitive to beat them for the division, they already had a top three recruiting class every year.
Yeah.
You know, I think what it does is it removes that even thought that he's not going to coach at Georgia for the next 10 or 15 years.
Right.
He will be there. So, and that, you always wonder that. I mean, look, they ran Mark Richt out of town, and they did a good thing, actually. They got Kirby Smart. I mean, it was like probably not an easy decision. It's probably why it took forever to do it. But, like, you know, he never won one. He was there forever. So, and we can say what we want about Georgia, but they are not the get rid of the coach super fast at the first sign of anything going wrong or adversity guys anyway, but he's going to be there forever. He's going to be recruiting at a top three level forever. And if he can outlast Saban, and you know what? Now we don't even have to say that, right? It was who's the next coming when when Saban is done, who's the next Saban? Well, there's not going to ever be another one of those, but Kirby Smart now can put himself right up at the top, and they are equals. When they go into players' homes and there's a legitimate Bama offer to this five-star and a legitimate Georgia offer to this five-star, they were already splitting those. So if anything, they may parlay that into a year or two where they get a few players that might have gone to Alabama instead. Then that's really – then it's like even more
– Nick Saban's still selling seven championships where Kirby Smart's selling one, but the one is very different than selling we hope to win one.
Well, they used to go into players' homes and they would sell chance to win championships, even better chance to get drafted and get drafted high.
Yeah.
Georgia's right at the top of the in the NFL for roster active, playing on Sundays players. Bama's got way more than them, so they that you know what I mean. It's kind of like, but now they can go in there and they can say play for championships, drafted high in the NFL, developed. Oh, hey, mom. By the way, yes, great education. Mm-hmm. Got to throw that in there, right? Because to a lot of moms and dads too, but it's a lot of
and
moms.
Both of those schools provide a very good education.
Yes,
in
and they
world.
They do that, and they provide all the things to make sure that the guys can pass class, and they you know make sure they go, and they provide tutors and. Now, that's one of those things where it's like everybody says it, but if you're on a recruiting pitch and you don't bring it up, then that's all mom wants to hear. All mom wants to hear with five-star baby boy.
She wants to know that it's important to the coach, whether it's important to the coach or not. If the coach says it, it's important to him.
You're going to be around good people while he's there? Yeah. Is he going to be able to get drafted? More than likely. Yeah. I mean, can't guarantee that, but if he plays it's like he does, I mean, it's not... The conversations for those two schools recruiting don't change at all, except Kirby now gets to add national champion, best in the world,
yeah,
to his pitch.
Yeah, it's not like they weren't doing it at all. So I understand the point of, well, does it really affect him?
Not yet.
I see where you're coming from in saying that it doesn't impact, but I disagree.
Yeah. No, yeah, for sure. I mean, to me, one of the more important ones would be like, what does Billy Napier do?
Oh, like, yeah.
I just personally am not
Josh
worried about
Heupel
Georgia.
Has a year of concept to show on the recruiting trail. If you're Billy Napier, if you're Shane Beamer, if you're Mark Stoops, see, and with all the success that Mark Stoops and Kentucky have had, what's your pitch now? That. Well, after I've been here all this time, we've worked our way up to where we get to go to the Citrus Bowl.
No, and I think the pitch is you're recruiting for the most part against Tennessee, Kentucky. I mean, it's Tennessee, South Carolina, Missouri. We are still all of the other schools, and I'm going to put Florida in there now too. They have to be. We are all trying to pull from basically the same group of tons of players. But we're all trying to pull those players. So if Florida takes a step back, if Billy Napier doesn't hit it running with and just kill it in recruiting, then you know Eli Drinkwitz has done a good job recruiting. Mark Stoops has done a good job. But I would say of all those schools right now, the most hype probably is Tennessee, and that matters when you're recruiting. That's probably you know when these players all watched the season last year, that's probably what they thought looked the most fun, especially offensive players.
Yeah.
So I feel good about that, but it's kind of, yeah, it's like, and that's always been my thing forever. We talk about championships and stuff. Until we are competitive to win the division, everything else needs to be to stay above the rest of the guys. We need to stay above every other team in the SEC East. At this point, I would even say Florida. Yeah, I mean, that's
winning,
not an easy situation for them right now.
Beating Florida next year is going to be critical.
Yeah, I agree. If you because right now it's been Georgia 1, Florida 2, everybody else 3, Vandy at the bottom.
Yeah.
And you need to make it to where it's Georgia 1, Tennessee 2.
Or at
everybody
least an
else.
Argument
or,
that Tennessee's
or Tennessee 2A, Florida 2B, something like that, where it's like you're in that second tier. You know, because like and when I played there, there wasn't a team that was that dominant that won it every year. I mean, it got to that way with Florida after I left, but like it was up for grabs. There was three of us. It was Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. And between the three of us, one of the three of us had to win it. But it was a three-way all at the first tier. Right now, Georgia's so far ahead of everybody else that we need to – Heupel needs to not worry about Georgia. He needs to worry about putting himself in that second position. So we're stealing all the four stars out of that whole group of recruiting.
Yeah. You got to make sure that you're the alpha of everybody, not named Georgia. Stiff arm
the rest of them, and then you'll worry about catching them when you can, but yeah.
But you're never, to your point, you're never going to catch them if you are actively fighting off Kentucky, South Carolina, and Missouri.
If you're in that group, you're not even in the conversation.
Yeah.
No, you got to get out of that group.
All right, hour number two of the Eric Cain Show is coming up next. Randall, we always appreciate your time. 656-9900 if you want to join us in the 10 o'clock hour. How wrong were the preseason predictions in college football? And were they wrong because they were wrong, or because this was one of, if not the craziest seasons in college football history? We'll take a look at all of that. So we have Big Topic Wednesday, season in review outside of Tennessee. Coming up next on the Eric Cain Show on the Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.